Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City! A 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this wonderful red/blue Friday. There is so much to get into. We will talk some Royals baseball today, as the Royals are exactly one game out of the postseason. So if you don't know all the particulars, let me tell you what the particulars are. The Royals' magic number is one. That means any combination of a Royals win or a Twins loss means that the Royals are going to the postseason. So the Royals could get swept this weekend in Atlanta. Certainly hope that's not the case, but if they got swept in Atlanta, they would need the Orioles to win at least one game against the Minnesota Twins. If that happens, the Royals are in the postseason. If not, who knows what happens? But that is at least the most basic way of explaining how the Royals can make it to the postseason. They just either have to win one of these games or they need the Twins to lose one of their next three games, and the Royals will be playing next Tuesday. We will find out if either they are going to Baltimore or Houston. We will talk about the Kansas City Chiefs as well. I don't think this game has a lot of buzz and juice about it. The Chargers are coming in really banged up. Herbert's banged up. Derwin James is out, but it is still a divisional game on the road. We'll spend a lot of time talking about that. Nate Taylor is going to join us in studio. We are going to take a trip to Los Angeles coming up here in just a bit with our guy Daniel Popper. There is so much to get into. We will start with the Royals today, but before we do any of that, Rob, take it away.
Pizza time on The Drive. Carrington, dial me up right now. Call number 6, 913-586-7965. Call number 6 wins a pizza from our friends over at Pizza Tassio. Pizza Tassio is Kansas City's best New York-style pizza, and it has taken over the town. They use locally grown fresh ingredients, all made by KC guys who both know and love pizza. They also have a killer selection of craft and local beers, as well as unique wine. So whether you're hungry enough for a slice or maybe a whole pie, be sure to visit them now at Pizza Tassio. That's pizza, TASCIO.com.
I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you to tell one friend. I don't need you to tell two friends that if you want some of the best pizza in the city and you're also excited about possibly the Royals and the Chiefs going to the postseason, and Mizzou going to the postseason, and K-State potentially going to the postseason. I don't know about that other team. I don't think they're eligible for the postseason, but that's neither here nor there. The best place to be is with us right here on 96.5 The Fan. You know what? We usually don't do this, but I would like to hand things off to Rob today for the open, because Rob thinks that Major League Baseball made a big mistake. I would say the two biggest storylines as we head into the weekend regarding the Royals is the weather. The weather in the southeastern part of this country is probably the number one story in the country right now, and the Royals find themselves at the center of it. I would say the other story is, and we'll certainly talk about it, is what version of Travis Kelce are the Chiefs getting? I don't sense any worry from Chiefs fans about this game. I don't think that you should be worried about this game. The Chiefs are an 8.5-point favorite. They're playing a team that is completely banged up. They have won 9 in a row. They're the best team in the National Football League. There are going to be games that I'm going to be a little bit nervous. Last week against the Falcons was one of those games. I don't come into this week with any worry. I think the biggest questions with Kansas City are around Travis Kelce, and he spoke with the media earlier today, and also how involved is Kareem Hunt going to be in the offense? I would say those are the two biggest stories heading into the weekend. But Rob, let's start with you. You think that Major League Baseball made a mistake by how they're handling Royals and Braves?
Yeah, first and foremost, about the storm that's hitting the southeast part of the United States. I know there's a lot of flooding. I've seen stories about power outages in southeastern Georgia, in Asheville, North Carolina. So first and foremost, the human element of all this, that is what's most important, the people who are actually being affected by this storm beyond just baseball and sports and so on. But our job is the sports. Let's talk about it. Baseball is the king of no foresight, the absolute king of no foresight. Carrington, hurricanes are not like tornadoes. Hurricanes are things that you can plot and you can time. Hey, it's coming. It's going to hit on this day. It is this category. It is this level of problem. We've known this for a while about Helene hitting landfall. And yet, despite that knowledge on the Weather Channel or the local weather or your news station, whatever have you, baseball decided, hey, we're just going to see what happens. And because of that, now Mets and Braves are having a doubleheader on Monday, which could potentially screw the Braves with having to play a doubleheader the day before a potential wild card series. But it also makes tonight's game in peril. Now, we've now heard through the grapevine that we do believe tonight's game is being played, but if baseball had some foresight, this wouldn't have been a problem. You could have easily moved Mets-Braves doubleheader to last Monday when both teams had a mutual off day, and you could have sat down with the Braves and the Royals and said, hey, we need a neutral site for this weekend because there is a chance the hurricane really affects this game. We saw it in football last year. Remember, Browns and Bills was in Detroit because of the blizzard? This is normal for sports, but baseball didn't think forward, and they got caught with their pants down Thursday, Friday, and it might really affect very important games for the Royals and Braves in a playoff push.
This is where I will defend baseball a little bit, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. I don't know how they could have made the schedule work given when the playoffs start. The Major League Baseball playoffs start on Tuesday, so we are talking a very quick turnaround, and there's not a lot of empty days that you can move things around. If this weather happens in June or July, I think baseball has the inventory, has the space that you can make it work. But if you're talking about the final week of the season and these three games don't just affect the two teams, they affect Minnesota, they affect the Mets, they affect the playoff picture, who's going where, who's home, who's road. There are so many tentacles that kind of spawn off of these games. I think baseball was kind of put in a rough spot. So they're going to try to do a doubleheader on Monday with the Mets and the Braves. So I think that means that the wild card team, that team's going to end up playing on Wednesday. You kind of have to keep the competitive balance. You have to do things fair for everybody. There was no chance that they were going to give the Royals home games in these scenarios. That's a major advantage at this point of the season. The Royals could get swept in this series. So I don't think you could turn these from road games to home games. I also don't know if it's fair to the Braves, who got a chance to play in the postseason. All right, we're now going to have you play three doubleheaders over the course of a 7-day span so you guys can make sure that you get all 162 in. I think baseball, Rob, was kind of put in a very, very difficult spot because of the end of the season, the quick turnaround, and not wanting to completely alter the playoff schedule. This would be okay if you could move the playoffs back 3 or 4 days to accommodate the close of the regular season, but when your playoffs start 48 hours after your regular season ends, there just wasn't a whole lot of time, I thought, to get the games in correctly and how ideally I think everyone would like for them to.
There's no doubt time was a major impact on what happened here. I just feel like baseball could have known this was coming because the Weather Channel news was coming. News stations across the nation knew this was coming. We were talking in the newsroom a couple days ago. We share a newsroom with 98.1. We're talking to Dana and Parks. And they were talking about how this got upgraded, I believe it was Tuesday or Wednesday, to a Category 4 hurricane. If people in Kansas City newsrooms know that on Tuesday, Wednesday, meteorologists probably know it Monday, Tuesday. The Mets and Braves had a mutual off day last Monday. Now you're not bleeding in to a potential Monday after the season date. That would have worked. I've looked at the days that could have made that work. And I know competitive advantage, the games could have never been in Kansas City, but you could have played these games in, you could have played these games and pick a town that's not in the Southeast. You could have played these games at, I guess, the White Sox Park. You could have played these games at a neutral location and just say, hey, I'm sorry, we got to get to the 162 number, but we also have to protect that playoff schedule. We just saw football do this. We just saw it. And the Bills were in the midst of a playoff race, and so were the Browns. And yeah, it's a competitive disadvantage for both teams, and I believe they even played on like a Friday or something weird. We've seen this in football all the time. Remember, I think it was 10, 15 years ago, the Chiefs played a Friday night game on the road against the Dolphins because a hurricane was bearing down, and they thought, hey, we got to get this game in before the storm hits. That is a thing that happens in sports, but baseball just thought, ho-hum, we'll figure it out, and that is potentially screwing the Braves. And again, word is tonight's game is going to be played, but it could have potentially screwed the Royals.
Coming up in just a bit, we're going to be joined by Daniel Popper. He covers the Chargers for The Athletic. We will talk more about this coming up in a bit, but I will say this. This feels like it is primed for a Travis Kelce bounce back game. Travis Kelce in his last four games against the Chargers, he has 33 catches for 536 yards and six touchdowns. Derwin James, the very talented safety for the Chargers, is suspended and out for this game. If there is a Travis Kelce bounce back narrative to create, isn't it this game? It is starting to turn into a story. I told you guys a couple of weeks ago that this conversation wasn't just going to be Chiefs fans. It was going to turn into a national conversation. That is starting to get louder. Let us get through a month of football and Travis Kelce has 100 yards receiving. You think it's at a 7 or 8 now. It will only continue to get louder. Pat will be asked more questions about it. Andy Reid will also be asked more questions about it. Some of this is just natural sports. Some of this is due to the fact of this just isn't a ESPN story. This is a TMZ story now about Travis Kelce. This is a People magazine story. He has become one of the three most popular players in the NFL. So anything that he does, both positively and negatively, is going to be covered through that lens. Travis Kelce, and I would say the team, in terms of a conversation around them, could really use a Travis Kelce game. I don't think you need him to go out and have 110 yards and three touchdowns. Four catches, 70 yards, one touchdown. That is a bounce back game. It quiets all of this conversation. There's no more noise around Travis Kelce. Him doing a press conference today was a direct response to what everybody is saying about the way that he is playing. You can't really see it any other way. Hey, everybody else is asking questions about Travis. Why doesn't Travis just answer questions about himself? We'll play for you what he had to say. But first, let's go to Los Angeles, California, and be joined by Daniel Popper of The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Chargers. We'll learn more about their injuries and what chance does he give them on Sunday. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Let's go to the phone lines right now and learn more about the Chiefs' Week 4 opponent. We'll head to Los Angeles to be joined by Daniel Popper. He covers the team for The Athletic. Daniel, man, happy to have you on the show today, man. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Let's just start with the injury status right now of the Los Angeles Chargers. They seem to be one of the more banged up teams in the National Football League.
Yeah, it's not looking great right now. Obviously, you start with the quarterback and Justin Herbert, who suffered a high ankle sprain in week two against the Panthers, came back and played on it last week against the Steelers and aggravated it in the third quarter. The team is saying that MRI on Monday came back positive. He's been limited in practice the past 2 weeks, but he has not been out there for the open period of practice available to the media, so hard to really gauge how he's moving on it. So you start there. Joey Bosa has a hip injury, one of the top two edge rushers, and then they could be without, and likely will be without, both of their starting tackles, and Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt. Alt has a sprained MCL. Slater has a strained pec. We've seen Alt on the field working a little bit with the trainers. We have not seen Rashawn Slater out there. So those four guys, you're talking about four of their best players. And then you add in Junior Colson, a linebacker, and some other guys that are dinged up right now. It's not a great situation for the Chargers as they enter this game.
Daniel, let's remove the Herbert component from it, just being the quarterback. I think that's the correct answer. Which of those other injuries do you think is most important for this matchup? Do you think it's Alt, the top 10 pick? Do you think it's Rashawn Slater, another first-round pick, offensive lineman, or do you think it's Bosa? Which injury is the most impactful for this game?
Yeah, I mean, I got to go with the two tackles because it really throws things into a bind for them up front. Joe Alt was playing some solid football. I think people are maybe getting ahead of their skis a little bit because in that Steelers game, they gave help to him on a dozen snaps against T.J. Watt. He was not one-on-one very often. But you talk about losing two all-pro caliber tackles, and the guys that are going to replace him are not nearly as good. You're talking about potentially kicking Trey Pipkins back out to tackle where he's played previously. He was starting at right guard this season. At left tackle, we've seen Jamari Stallier there, who has played there before, but really is a better fit at guard. He doesn't really have the movement to play at tackle. And then you have Foster Sorrell, a guy who's played a little bit in the past, but there's going to be a real issue in terms of how they're able to pass protect with those two tackles being down.
Right now, we're talking to Daniel Popper. He is with The Athletic, getting his thoughts on the Los Angeles Chargers as we get you ready for Week 4, Chiefs and Chargers. The Chargers are 2-1. They have a win over the Raiders. They have another win over Carolina. They lost last week to Pittsburgh. I know it's kind of difficult to say with the injuries that they have, but how real is this Chargers team? They got off to a good start, but it looks like the injuries could derail this season.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out on Sunday. I mean, offensively, I kind of have a better idea of what they are on that side of the ball, if they're fully healthy, obviously. But I've seen some promising signs from the running game in those first 3 weeks. Obviously, bringing in Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh, that's how they're going to want to play. I think Justin Herbert has played some good football. They're lacking at receiver in terms of people that can really win one-on-ones and separate in that area. But I think they're okay offensively. Defensively, I have absolutely no idea because they go out and they play Gardner Minshew. They play Bryce Young, and he gets benched after that game. And then you go up against Justin Fields, who I thought played well, but obviously those three guys aren't testing your defense. I think heading into this one, you're going to get a real sense of what they are defensively and if they're real on that side of the ball. The statistics would tell you that they're one of the best defenses in the league. You watch the film, and they're a much more physical team than they've ever really been since I started covering them in 2019 on that side of the ball. But this is the test, right? You go in, you play Patrick Mahomes, you play Andy Reid, and you get a real sense of where you are. Now, how much can you really take away when they're down Joey Bosa? And then one guy we haven't mentioned is Derwin James, who suspended for this game after getting his fifth unnecessary roughness call in two seasons. Obviously a guy that, particularly with how Jesse Minter, the defensive coordinator, is using his pieces, would probably have been matched up against Travis Kelce pretty regularly in this game, something we've seen in the past. So down two defensive stars, how much of a sense can you really get? But that's what I'll be watching in this game because I don't know if they're really real or not on that side of the ball.
You mentioned no Derwin James. I was going to get to that. What do you think that means for their ability to slow down Travis Kelce? I know he's gotten off to a slow start, but he has been kryptonite for the Los Angeles Chargers. And Derwin James has usually been the one that has been tasked with shadowing Travis Kelce. How confident are you in the Chargers' ability to kind of defend the middle of the field without James present?
Yeah, I mean, I think heading into this game, that really would have been the plan because they've been using James sort of as that chess piece. You know, he was really matched up with Brock Bowers a bunch in that week one game against the Raiders, and they're trying to get him into matchups that they feel like can really elevate him. So instead of that being the plan, it seems like it's going to be more of a all-hands-on-deck scenario. They have Alohi Gilman, who Chiefs fans should be familiar with. He's in his fifth season with the Chargers. They traded for Elijah Molden late in August with the Titans. They gave up a seventh round pick for him. And he's actually been really good kind of in that third safety role. Alohi Gilman missed week two and Molden started and actually had a pick. So those are going to be the two guys. And then the third guy could be Tony Jefferson, obviously a veteran. They also have AJ Finley, a young guy who actually had a pretty decent training camp who was going to be the third safety before they traded for Elijah Molden. So I think you're going to see those guys are all versatile. You know, Elijah Molden can play dime, slot, deep field safety. AJ Finley can play all three. So I think what they're going to try and do is all hands on deck, get kind of creative with their disguises, move those pieces around to different positions, and try and maybe buy an extra count for the pass rush as Mahomes drops back and looks for Kelce.
Right now we're talking to Daniel Popper, who covers the Los Angeles Chargers. They play the Chiefs this weekend. Daniel, what changes have you noticed as an organization, as a coaching staff, now bringing Harbaugh in? That was the big home run swing, attracting him from Michigan. I think he's one of the top five football coaches in the world, not just NFL coaches. When you've seen what he's done at every single level, that's a big deal to go get him. What changes have you noticed with the Chargers?
Yeah, I think off the field, a lot of people use this, the buzzword culture. You know, what I've been sort of watching is, like, what does that really mean, and how does Harbaugh, who's obviously a great culture builder, go about doing that? the one thing I've noticed is that he really is in there in the trenches with his players. And some of this stuff is kind of silly. Like, he's out there in the spring and summer doing, you know, strength and conditioning drills with the players after practice. And he's on the field before games with, you know, football gloves on, catching passes in cleats, you know, from his quarterbacks before games and stuff like that. And you might look at it and be like, yeah, this is a little corny. But I think the players really buy into it because they feel like he cares as much as they do. The other thing that I think has really jumped out now that we have sort of three games worth of film, and I sort of touched on this earlier, there is a level of physicality that they are playing with on both sides of the ball that just wasn't present under Brandon Staley. It is like the most important thing that Jim Harbaugh is trying to instill in the roster and in the players. And just talking to guys in the locker room, like, there's a standard now. Like, you have to play with a certain physical mentality on the field, or you're not going to get on the field and probably not be part of this organization moving forward. So I think culture building has been a big part of it, and then sort of setting that standard as far as play style and physicality. Those are the two things that I've really noticed.
Daniel, looking at the offense, J.K. Dobbins has gotten off to a really good start. He's been one of the better running backs so far this season. Quentin Johnston, when you and I talked last year, fans were a little bit disappointed with what they were getting from him. He's been fine so far through this season. This Chargers team feels like they have a little bit more weaponry than we thought they were going to.
Yeah, I think you've seen Quentin take some significant steps. I mean, the things that I'm sure we talked about last year were, you know, he lacked refinement, detail, deception, the route running, the hands weren't where they needed to be. I also think that the previous coaching staff wasn't necessarily using him correctly to put his skill set in a position to really express itself and elevate and shine. And so I think what you're seeing this year is a guy that's a better route runner. He's obviously focused in on the details, and he's much more deceptive in his releases, how he runs his routes, his understanding of where to be and leverages and all of that. And then the Chargers are using him in better situations. They've upped his number of crossing routes, drag routes, slants, things over the middle, and they've lowered his posts and goes. And I think you're seeing a player that's improved, that is also being used more properly. And he's been good through these first few weeks. You know, Josh Palmer's been banged up. I was sort of expecting him to have a bigger role this season, just obviously with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, both, you know, Keenan traded, Mike released. And then the other guy I would bring up is, and we'll see if Josh Palmer plays this week. He didn't play last week. But Ladd McConkey's also looked really good. Their second round pick, who's really, you know, been, you know, primarily used in the slot, but he's a fantastic route runner. And I think he really popped off the film in that Steelers game with his little more physicality than I was expecting, but then his ability to really operate on third downs, find those soft spots and zones, win in man coverage on slant routes and things over the middle. So they do have some juice there. I don't know if it's going to be enough to get them to where they want to be offensively, but definitely some promising signs.
I got two final questions here, Daniel. The first one is, give me an X factor. Give me somebody that Chiefs fans should be kind of looking for on that Chargers team, whether it's on offense or defense, that you can make plays and maybe help pull off an upset.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pass rush is going to be really important, you know, trying to get Mahomes off the spot, but more importantly, being disciplined in how you rush. Obviously, you can't be over-aggressive in your rush and give him lanes to escape and create those explosives off script. So, obviously, Khalil Mack is going to be who he is. The other guy that's going to be starting in this game with Joey Bosa likely out is Tuli Tuipulotu, who was a rookie last year. Now, can he, you know, be the guy when he has one-on-ones on that side to really create havoc and rush with discipline? That's a guy I'll be watching, because going to that Steelers game, Bosa got hurt on the first play, and Khalil was getting double and triple teamed on every single snap. And I assume if Bosa's out, that's how the Chiefs will attack it. They're not going to let 52 wreck the game. So somebody on the other side, I think it'll be Tuli Tuipulotu. They also have Bud Dupree. Someone's going to have to be able to win one-on-ones over there and create some havoc and also rush with discipline to prevent Mahomes from escaping and really thriving in those off-script situations.
Daniel, last thing here. Give me a Chiefs win-if scenario. Give me a Chargers win-if scenario.
I think Chargers win if they can run the ball effectively and if their offensive line that's a little bit banged up is able to keep Herbert upright and prevent him from being knocked out of this game. And defensively, just you know, protecting the deep part of the field and really limiting those explosive plays. And on the flip side, I think if the Chiefs are able to, as always, get outside the pocket and create some of those explosive and off-script situations, like we've seen so many of these games tight, and those plays ultimately end up deciding the game. So for the Chargers, the key is, like, you're going to have these disguises, you're going to have your calls defensively, you're going to play all these varieties of covers, you're going to try and create some confusion. Sometimes you can execute that properly, and then the second play is where the Chiefs are able to really, you know, create damage. So being sticky after the play gets to that second part and, you know, not allowing receivers to get open down the field in those off-script situations.
That is Daniel Popper joining us on the show today. He covers the Los Angeles Chargers, the Chiefs' Week 4 opponent. Daniel, great stuff as always, man. I'll catch up with you in a couple months whenever these two teams play again.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is Daniel Popper joining us on the show today. Rob, I'm not sure if you have looked at the injury report for the Los Angeles Chargers. Let me give you their Thursday injury report because the Friday one is not out. Listen to this. Joe Alt did not practice. Joey Bosa did not practice. Junior Colson out. Limited participants. Christian Fulton, Justin Herbert, Khalil Mack was a full participant. Trey Pipkins, one of their tackles, he was a limited participant. Rashawn Slater, a DMP in this one. I just gave you some of the names. There were more names than that for guys that were just limited participants and did not participate in the Chargers practice. Usually, these two teams play tightly contested games. I know you guys laugh and joke and call me Chargers Dot, but that is not an opinion. That is a fact. These teams, when they go up against each other, they are usually one possession games. It's just kind of hard to see the Chargers winning this game with the amount of injuries that they have right now. You're not beating the Chiefs if you don't have your starting left tackle and right tackle, if you don't have your number one corner going in this game, if your quarterback is dealing with a high ankle sprain the way that the Chargers are. It's just hard to kind of find a scenario in which the Chargers can pull off this upset and beat Kansas City, because I just don't think they have the bodies right now. I just don't think that they have the manpower, Rob, to think that the Chargers are in a position where they could pull off the upset and beat Kansas City on Sunday.
It's like same old story, right? Carrington, how many times have we talked about going into a Charger game? Well, the Chargers are beat up and the Chiefs are more healthy, so it should clearly favor one team. I feel like that's the story every single Charger game. Isn't that the whole point of chargering? But this injury report is bad. Like, let's put Herbert to the side because we all know how bad that can be. No Alt, no tackles, Fulton's a corner, potentially no Bosa. Like, that is, these are not just like they're missing guys. They're not just missing human bodies out there. It's not like, oh, one of your rotational linebackers isn't going to play. Your nickel corner's banged up. These are the pillars of their team and their organization and what they're trying to build. With the injury report the way it is hard to envision a scenario, even with how tough the Chargers have historically played the Chiefs, that beat up ragtag group can go and win a game against the Chiefs, who are near clean bill of health outside of Hollywood Brown. Basically, everyone is playing this week. It's hard to envision a scenario where that group loses to the Chargers.
One thing I have noticed in our conversations about the Chargers is how often the word physical comes up. That when you bring Harbaugh in from Michigan, there is a certain level of physicality that you want to provide. Are you not seeing the cost of some of that? When you look at their injury report, damn near the whole team is on there. Maybe that is the cost of in year one, trying to establish that mindset, trying to establish that physicality, to trying to establish that toughness. Some guys are going to miss time. Everybody is dealing with injuries, even though it's early on in the season. Kansas City has injuries, so they are not feeling bad for you that you are missing these guys. But man, you're going into a game against the best team in the National Football League. You are missing 40% of your offensive line. Your quarterback is not 100% right now. And your best defensive player is not out. You just don't have the bodies. You just don't have them, I think, to go up and beat Kansas City. So we'll see what happens. Usually this is, I would say, a game that you have to circle because of how competitive it is. I'm just not really sure if that's the case right now, given all of the injuries that the Chargers have right now. We'll give you our parlay coming up in a bit. We'll also go through some of the top storylines for Sunday in the National Football League. I do want to play for you guys a couple of pieces of audio. We will play Travis Kelce coming up at the top of the hour. I do want you guys to hear what he had to say. Here is Patrick Mahomes talking about Travis Kelce and if a 25-year-old tight end would be doing this.
In all honesty, I think he's always been this guy. I mean, it's been great for me in my career is that he wants to make an impact in the game and he wants to make plays, but he wants to win at the end of the day. And so if we're winning, he's good with going out there and playing hard, blocking, do whatever he can to impact the game. And so whenever winning games like this, that's everybody, man. You just want to win at the end of the day. And so he's doing a great job, man, of being a leader on the team, playing hard, doing whatever he can to make an impact in the game. And when you do that in this league, usually good things come. And I'm excited for him to go out there and make an impact receiving the ball as well.
I want to play one more cut for you guys. This is Andy Reid talking about Travis Kelce. So you just heard from the quarterback. Here's the head coach about the slow start their tight end has gotten off to.
Yeah, so, you know, I know people are saying that he's old or whatever, has distractions and all this, and the defenses don't think that. And so we have another receiver that plays opposite him that has a lot of yards and catches. And that's how this thing goes. So Trav is fine. He just keeps being Trav. He works his tail off, and he hasn't lost a step and all those things. He's not distracted. That's not the case. People are making sure they have him taken care of by some of these defenses.
I do think that the entire conversation around Kelce is a very interesting one, and I obviously understand the Chiefs' position. It's not age. He's the same tight end that we've seen. He's not distracted. He's being defended very differently. Like, the Chiefs clearly have, this is their official stance on Travis Kelce, his production, and moving forward. Okay. We'll see. The only part I don't really like in this, and I would say at this point it's a very small complaint, is I kind of know what my eyes are telling me, and we have seen Travis Kelce over the course of the last decade be one of the most unguardable players in the National Football League. There have definitely been times where he was getting this level of attention from defenses, and you just couldn't defend him because of how great of a player he is. He now seems like a player that you can guard, a player that you can, in a lot of ways, take out of the game. So that's like one side of it. But it's also early on in the season, so I certainly understand giving a player of his caliber the benefit of the doubt moving forward and how we discuss that player. That's why I'm looking at this one. This is a game against that defense, against that team, a scheme that you are very familiar with. This is the get-right potential game. You're just not going to be able to sell me if Travis Kelce goes out there and has three catches for 25 yards, and we go through an entire month of the season, you're telling me Travis Kelce is 100% healthy, and he has less than 100 yards through the first 4 weeks of the season. Something is off, and it is just not defenses now have figured out how to eliminate Travis Kelce from the game. So at least for me, and I cannot dictate when anybody else's timeline is, or maybe this is something that you will not be worried about in the regular season. It does not matter what he does in the regular season. We will follow up on this in January. That is perfectly fine. It is the end of September, and this is a very unusual start to Travis Kelce's career. This is an unusual start to how his season goes. You remember last year, after the injuries, we started having this conversation. He then popped up with two back-to-back dynamic games against the Minnesota Vikings in the following week. That's kind of what I'm hoping happens, to just eliminate this conversation. If Kelce goes out there and balls out, you know what we will not be talking about next week? This with Travis Kelce. But these things, they just snowball over time, and it will continue to get louder. And Mahomes and Reed will be asked about it every single week as long as this continues to be the case. I look at the big-time receivers in this league, the big-time playmakers in this league. It's just hard to take them out of the game. Look at the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys have one good receiver. You're not defending CeeDee Lamb right now because he's that good of a player. It's hard to take out really, truly special players in the National Football League, or something else is happening. We will get more information as time progresses on what that could potentially be. All right, coming up on the other side, let's go through some of the top storylines for Sunday in the National Football League. I'll also give you my favorite college bet for the weekend, also my favorite NFL bet for the weekend. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, Rob, let's do this. I am going to give you my college football bet that I really like for this weekend. I am going to give you my NFL bet that I really like for the weekend. You will give yours as well. Why don't we try to put together a parlay that can help people win a little bit of money? Hit the music. All right, let's start with college football. You know what I am going to take? I am going to take Jam Miller. He is the running back at Alabama. I am going to take him to score an anytime touchdown. It is mind-blowing to me that Jam Miller right now, you are getting plus money for him to score a touchdown. He has a touchdown in all three of the games so far for the Crimson Tide. He is averaging 9.1 yards per carry. They only have two players that are going to score a rushing touchdown. It's Jalen Milroe, who right now is at minus money, or you can get their starting running back at plus money. I cannot believe this is the case. That is my favorite bet of the weekend. Last time I checked, you could get it at plus 145. I took this in a parlay. I also sprinkled my 50% boost on this as well. Cannot believe you're giving me that odds for him. It's one of the best bets that you can make this weekend. I actually like him to score the first touchdown of the game if you really want to get frisky with it. I'm going to take Jam Miller plus 145 to score a touchdown.
I like where your head's at. I also am going to take one of the best teams in the country, but I'm going to take them to score. UCLA is not good. They are playing in the Rose Bowl, which will be a road game for them, against Oregon. I like the over on Oregon's total points, which is at 40.5. We saw LSU was sluggish last week and still was scoring in bunches against UCLA. So if you play Oregon over the total of 40.5 and Jam Miller for an anytime touchdown on our friends at FanDuel, plus 357, Carrington.
You know what? I like that one. All right, let's go to the National Football League. There's a couple of different ways that I can go on this thing, but you know what? I got to go with the tried and true. I got to take Baltimore minus the 2.5 at home. I just think that's the best play that you can make. Another one that I think you should keep an eye on, if the line hasn't changed, the Browns, you could have got them at plus money at 1.5 before the injuries really started to kick in. So I don't know if that's still the case. It could be. It could not be. Make sure that you check. I'll give you a couple of different options. I'll give you Baltimore at home minus 2.5. Just feels like the right play with them at home. Also, if you want to get a little dangerous, I'm going to take Carolina plus 180 on the money line. This Cincinnati team is falling and falling fast. I think this year so far has told you to take dogs and trust dogs. Carolina at home, I think they can score on Cincinnati. I think they can move the ball. The total is at 47.5, so Vegas thinks there's going to be points. So I'll give you a couple options. You can either take the Ravens and the points, or take the Panthers straight up at plus 180 to give yourself a little bit more action.
I'm going to take the Ravens bet for our purposes, but for me, it's a Monday night bet. Lions minus 3.5 against the Seahawks.
I like that one too.
I think the Seahawks are frauds, and you got Monday night in Detroit. That team I know is a little beat up, but I am just down on the Seahawks. They do not seem real at all to me. So 3.5 is a little bit of points to give up, but I'm not giving up the farm in that game. If you play Ravens minus 2.5 and Lions minus 3.5 on FanDuel, Carrington, plus 249.
All right, let's get through some of the top storylines as we head into Sunday's action. Let's start with Ravens and Bills. This game feels like a coin flip. You can make a strong case for either of the teams to win. I'm picking the Ravens because they're at home. I don't need to give you some super dynamic take. I'm just going to take the Ravens because they're the home team, and I think that is the deciding factor in this. Buffalo has played as well as any team in the National Football League to kick things away. I think the Ravens started to figure some things out last week when they went on the road. We're talking about a team that narrowly lost in Kansas City, and it was just one of those games every team in the NFL has against the Raiders. I think this line should actually be a little closer to 3.5 or 4 for the Ravens, but you're going to give me the 2.5. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to take them at home. This is one of the more intriguing games for the weekend.
Looking at other games across the NFL, Carrington, you mentioned it earlier, Bills and Ravens. That game is fascinating, but also, I talked about it earlier with Lions and Seahawks. Are you a believer in the Seahawks at all? I know I'm just going off our parlay, but what are you seeing in the Lions and Seahawks game? Because maybe I'll end up looking like an idiot, but I think the Seahawks are on major fraud alert.
Yeah, I think that we're overreacting to the Lions going on the road and losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, let's just take a look at the what we've seen from Seattle so far. They beat Bo Nix at home. They went on the road and beat the Patriots by 3. And then they beat up on a Miami team that doesn't have their starting quarterback right now. I think the jury is very much still out for Seattle. You know that place is going to be rocking on Monday night. You know that the crowd's going to be into it. I'm with you. I still look at the Lions as being one of the 5 best teams at home in the National Football League. I don't want to overreact to what we've seen so far. I'm going to take the Lions at home. I'm with you. I like the 3.5. I like the Lions to take care of business.
Staying in the NFC North, Carrington, a game that I don't think anyone thought would be interesting in Week 4. Vikings and Packers, a big one this weekend at Lambeau. You last week, I will credit you. You deserve all the credit in the world. You were saying Vikings are going to beat the Texans.
I also said straight up, too. I said take them on the money line. I said they were going to win the game.
You made a lot of people some money. Jordan Love is practicing. He's doing walkthroughs, this, that, and the other. Do you believe he's healthy? And if he is, do the Vikings stand a chance on the road at Lambeau?
I'm going to go ahead and give you one of my favorite bets this week. I'm going to take the Packers at home. I also really like Jaden Reed. He's their number one receiver. If now you have Jordan Love back, I think he's even more viable than before to go out there and have some success. This is a team that has shown you that they can win a bunch of different ways. They've shown you that they can run the football. They did so with Josh Jacobs. They also did so with Malik Willis. This is a team that has a bunch of different options with Jaden Reed, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson. I like their tight end play with Tucker Kraft as well. I think the Packers take care of business at home. You know, I like them in the very beginning of the season. I like them still now. It feels like a coin flip kind of game. At some point, I think the Vikings come back to earth a little bit, and I think that place is on the road in Green Bay. Go ahead and give me the Packers outright at home.
All right, Carrington, last one. You mentioned it earlier. The Browns are facing a very, very, very beat-up Raiders team. No Crosby, no Adams. I could go down the list. Michael Mayer also out.
Yeah, very, very banged up right now.
Is the AFC West over this weekend? Because the Chiefs are playing the beat-up Chargers. The Broncos, do we need to talk about the Broncos? They are horrendous.
When was the AFC West ever up for a conversation? There was a time that we were talking about the Broncos. There was a time that we were talking about the Raiders. Absolutely not. I've never spent a second talking about those teams. Now, Cleveland is not good. Do not get me wrong. This is an offense that still struggles to score. They haven't scored more than 21 points so far this season. They scored 17 against the Cowboys, 18 against Jacksonville, and 15 against the Giants. I got to side with them here. I really, really do. I just have to. This Raiders team, they were bad last week. I do think they come out with a little bit more fight. But with all the key injuries that you just mentioned, you're not going to have Max Crosby. You're not going to have Devontae Adams. Where does the offense come from, especially for a team in the Raiders that can't really run the ball? They're not a very balanced team at all. That defense, I think, for the Browns has held up. It's really been the offensive side of the ball that has really let them down. I mean, Zamir White, he's averaging 3.2 yards per carry. If you're not going to have Devontae Adams, I mean, we're talking about a lot of Brock Bowers, a lot of Jacoby Myers and Trey Tucker. That's just not an offense that I think you can count on to win, especially for a team that is so one-dimensional. Go ahead and give me the Browns in that game as well. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, I do want to play for you guys what Travis Kelce had to say. Travis Kelce met with the media. There's certainly a lot of conversation around him. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. We'll also continue to bounce back and forth between Red Friday and a Blue Friday as well as the Kansas City Chiefs, or excuse me, the Royals. It is very, very simple for the Royals. All you need to do is win one of the next 3 games, or you need the Twins to lose one of their next 3 games as well. So it cannot be much more simple, cut and dry, straightforward for the Kansas City Royals. Either take care of your business or the Minnesota Twins that have already been falling very rapidly, you need them to stumble one more time. I would not worry about the Tigers. They have the Chicago White Sox this weekend. They are going to win that series, potentially sweep that series. So maybe we're talking about a tiebreaker scenario. I don't care about that at this point. Make sure that you get yourself into the dance. Coming up at the top of the hour, I'll play what Travis Kelce had to say for you guys. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.